I think it's really dark that we've reached the point in the simulation where all we can do to quiet our minds is to scroll on our tiny screens and watch Ballerina Farms, like, live an antiquated, like, rustic life that's connected to the land while we shove Cheetos in our mouth.
Well, well, Chandler, we are back on this stunning Wednesday. Chandler, we have a ton to get into today. The first is a piece of news that's very close to home.
Yes, this bit of news is right in my backyard. I won't fully dox myself, but it's in my neighborhood. And it's about a really expensive brownstone that is, mm-hmm. you know, now up for sale that I think, Lauren, you're considering buying, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a bull market again. No, we
aren't you able to get the loan from SoFi for this?
I might turn to my own lending company to try to get the loan. I'm going to do what I can. But in the meantime, Chandler, I think you should read why this news is hitting page six, why the sale of a brownstone or the listing of a brownstone is page six news for everyone to read about. Because for me, this is a hilarious article.
It's a hilarious article. I'll just read some of the funniest excerpts. So this is a New York Post article. The headline says, "Wealthy NYC pair accused of tormenting neighbors with years-long constructions to sell mega mansion for $85 million.
I remember walking your neighborhood and seeing mm-hmm. these signs that were like written by tortured people who were very upset. And it was very strange. I don't remember what the sign said. What did they say?
So I have a photo of the sign because I've seen this sign the whole time I've lived here. But let me just back up a little bit. So Essentially, a wealthy billionaire and his lady bought two brownstones next door to each other. And then for the past 2 years, they've been remodeling them into one big brownstone. So the completed brownstone, single brownstone, is 20,000 square feet. All right. It is massive. The primary bedroom alone, I think, is like 4,000 square feet or something crazy that has dual bathtubs. Anyway, just we're going to get into all the specs, but they basically created this monster brownstone, you know, with their gobs and gobs of money.
Can I just paint a picture for everyone that what this looks like when I saw the photos was it had the expanse and opulence of Amber Fillerup's light-filled, gorgeous home that we see on Instagram with the big high ceilings and the light coming through and the huge sectional. It looked like it was on a Studio McGee adjacent McMansion huge lot in Utah. You know, the Parcells could have this as their second home in Highland or whatever. But no, this is actually this great and spacious home is within a Manhattan neighborhood. It's like, well, how is this even possible?
What's crazy is that then you look through the windows, you know, of these massive windows, and you can see that there are other buildings very close by, and you're like, oh, this is like in a neighborhood of big buildings.
Yes.
And it's amazing. I mean, the house looks utterly insane. Nothing about it feels like an apartment, but it's been a journey to getting to this house. And mm-hmm. which brings us to the sign that you encountered, you know, one day when we were walking on the street. And the sign is just hilarious because basically, the neighbors have hated this construction. It has been just a total torment, as the headline says, because this construction has taken so long and it's been very loud. And so anyway, the sign has like six pieces of paper on it. One has like the Daily Mail article that, you know, is about the construction of it. And then the one in the center that's really supposed to catch your eye says, "Yes," in all caps. "This is the infamous swimming pool house causing neighbors," underlined, "so much distress," underlined.
Oh my God.
And there's another sign, another one of the pieces of paper says, "A dog on tranquilizers, neighbors forced to move, business calls in bathrooms." And then it's like a QR code, I think, to the petition to like shut down the construction.
I mean, it certainly is a huge issue if there's just perpetual construction on your street, in the home that you live in, and every day is drills, every day is dust. I have a lot of empathy for these people. And as a woman of the people, I'm not going to be laying down 85 mil for this McMansion in Manhattan anytime soon. I think I need to side with the common man. And so I am firmly anti these billionaires.
So what's interesting to know for people who, you know, not in Manhattan, not super familiar with Manhattan, is that this brownstone shares a wall with other homes.
Right.
And so, of course, the construction going on within the home, the noise is going to be such a problem for people on either side, not just mm-hmm. like neighbors living across the street or whatever.
Interesting.
And the big issue is when they were building the 55-foot indoor lap pool, which is true. That's like what they have there. That, like, I guess there's no photos of the lap pool, which I was really disappointed to find.
I tried to find look for them too.
But basically, so there's like a 55-foot indoor lap pool that opens up to like a sun deck or something crazy and amazing. And that was causing a lot of noise because there was a lot of jackhammering to build that pool. I'm actually on the side of the billionaires in this because really? I would love to befriend them or whoever buys the home. And I would just like to publicly state for the record that I totally think they're well within their rights to do this. And I would love to be invited over at some point as your friendly neighbor who's staunchly on your side.
Well, Chandler, I have actually thought of a scheme for how you and Ben could enjoy this beautiful home. Okay.
Okay.
How you could wake up to the light-filled expanse of a mm-hmm. monstrous living room in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. How you could swim in this pool likely filled with the tears of virgins. Okay.
I mean,
or at least the tears of the neighbors.
I've gotten a SoFi loan before. I could do it again.
Chandler, are you aware that right now we are going through a crisis of squatters in this country?
Oh, yes. I do know about squatting and I do know about squatters' rights.
Okay, so we know the names, it's public, of who owns this home. You and mm-hmm. I could get an acute word document right now and write up a lease. But what is the billionaire's names? I'm sure you have that.
I have this right here for you. And I actually think it's important to notice. It's Pierre Bastide and his wife, jazz singer Malou Beauvoir. I also heard that Malou considers herself to be a, quote, voodoo priestess. She's just honestly the life that she's living. I would like to come back as her in my next life as a billionaire's wife and also voodoo priestess living in a $85 million brownstone.
I just want to say, I think I would not be surprised if some voodoo was actually involved in this woman securing the very large bag she has secured. But yeah. I digress. I want to get back to my plan. So you and Ben, what we'll do is we'll draw up a Word document that Pierre and the voodoo priestess, you know, have leased to you this mm-hmm. home. You're mm-hmm. going to break in essentially. And then when the police come, you're going to furnish them with this lease.
Exactly.
Chandler just held up a piece of paper, said, actually, this is
I have my documents.
I am actually the rightful leasee. Okay.
Right.
And we will be residing here until the end of our
come
lease.
Come kick us out. Come and try then, to kick Chandler, us out. We've paid the bunny.
This is actually what is happening. The police then will say, okay, well, we can't do anything. They have a lease. They have an idea. Mm-hmm. We got to get a utility bill set up in your name. That's all going to be part of the scheme
as
well.
That's literally easy street. I can Photoshop anything. And then
the police are going to let you go on your merry way. Uh-huh. Then this couple, they're going to have to take you to court. The court system takes a long time, by the way.
A long time. A long, long time.
Like you I could have a full month.
Oh, I think I could be there for a few months. Like then.
You're going to film all of this and put it on our YouTube channel, and we're going to go viral again.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. This is,
I actually think I need to make a phone call to Ben and tell him to get his ass home from the office because we have work to do.
Oh,
and we have to move.
I have an opportunity to make cash during this process. You're going to throw rager parties.
Oh, okay.
That are people are going to have to buy tickets to.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're going to be like beyond incredible. Right. And you're going to make a ton of money as well. And then these people are just going to kick you out and it's not worth it to them to try to, you know, enforce any legal action on you.
I don't even think these people live in the U.S. I don't even think I'll ever have to see them.
No.
I'll just see like their representative or something. Lauren, I think that's an excellent plan. Thank you so much for thinking that through. I will be doing that. The next time I record, I will be recording from the 20,000 square foot home, maybe from one of the dual bathtubs. Which I thought when they said that there were dual bathtubs, I was like, okay, now that is a stretch. Like, you really need to be like in a Cialis commercial all the time with like you both in your dual bathtubs.
What does that mean? So instead of sharing a bath, you just are in baths side by side. Each other?
Yeah. It's literally like a Cialis commercial. Oh, gosh. Okay. So this is from a local. Neighbors, quote, awaken each morning to the jolting sounds and vibrations of jackhammers, residents wrote in a 2019 change.org petition, begging local officials to stop the project. They go on, we do not envision a mega mansion or a swimming pool. Instead, we hear the steady digging of graves. I don't really know what that means. Oh, no, here it is. So they go on. Yeah. Figuratively and literally, we see our graveyards because of the various toxic fumes entering our homes and our bodies, as well as the death of our block, our street, and our neighborhood as we know it.
I mean, they're not wrong, right?
This is just so New York, because this sounds like a street of artists. Like, clearly it was like somebody with a poet of some sort. I'm sure some like New York writer.
These are all family homes that they've had for generations. They're the sons and daughters of Pulitzer Prize winners. That's why they're digging their graves with those jackhammers for the dual bathtubs. It's a beautiful, arresting image. It definitely incites some empathy from me. I guess not from Chandler. Evokes some empathy.
I think there's something, too, about rich people who own property there being mad at, like, richer people. You know, it's just like I do have a little bit of a hard time bad for them.
When they leave the Upper West Side in order to move to another neighborhood, they're going to be refugees. I guess you're not a friend to refugees.
No, it's true. Not in this situation. I do feel bad. This woman said that she has experienced now moderate hearing loss and she had to get hearing aids.
I thought you have no empathy for these people.
I have some empathy for that. That would suck. But you know what? It's like, maybe they're going to get invited to some amazing parties at this brownstone. These are great neighbors to have. They should be looking on the bright side.
Honestly, they should be thanking their lucky stars. This is a great opportunity to make some TikToks and go viral. Where's the content, bitch? That's what I would say to the lady who lost her hearing.
Isn't there some real estate thing where like everyone's house prices go up if there's a really nice house? Something like that.
Chandler, a rising tide raises all boats. I'm pretty sure that's how the phrase goes.
Yes. Anyway, that's what I'm dealing with. But just to be clear, I'm staunchly on the side of the billionaires here, and whatever future billionaire will be buying the home. Welcome to the neighborhood.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
Did you know that there's a cottage industry where you can hire people to go squat with your squatters to get them out of your house?
Because to like annoy them?
There's like gangs of squatters now in California. I've heard it's happening.
Well, yeah. A lot of squatters are, I believe, of the freegan mindset, which means that you just don't pay for anything ever. You go to dumpsters for food. It's also not terrible. And you know, in a country like America, there's quite a lot of free shit to be had.
It's so true. And honestly, I think on this podcast especially, we get into the woes of capitalism. We do
all the
dark
time.
Yeah, the dark reality that we all face when we have to make a dollar bill and can't just go out and garden and feed our children from the leaves and from nature outside our homes,
from the leaves right outside our home. When our kids can't eat the leaves outside our home.
Okay, can I just segue into the next topic?
Please.
I don't know if we're going to leave this in, but Oprah did a whole special, okay, on Ozempic. And it's funny because now she's like an Ozempic shill. I watched all 45 minutes and it is a full 1 hour program about how incredible Ozempic is with 2 minutes on side effects. Okay. I think Ozempic is amazing. I think it's great. I love it for people. I love that it's working. But here's what I will say. I think it's interesting that 50 years ago, we did not have this obesity problem. We did not have so many people struggling in the way that they do. And there's just a part of me that's like, clearly our food supply is really effed up. I do think it's biological. I do think it's physiological and not behavioral. But I think that's caused because we live in a modern world. And this probably sounds so dumb to so many people, but we live in a modern world where we're so stressed, we don't have time to just go outside, pick the leaves, pick the vegetables from our garden. We don't have the time to make food like our pioneer ancestors, good, healthy food from the land. We are in environments where we have to work so long to make little money. Have you gotten groceries lately? It's expensive. Anyway,
it's expensive.
I think we should be trying to solve the ills of our modern world in conjunction with these pharmaceutical, life-saving, miraculous drugs.
Okay. Couple things here. Okay. I completely agree with you. I think that it's a multi-pronged problem that needs to be attacked from all sides, you know, with amazing medicine, with the way that our food is made and processed. And yeah, I think it's really dark that we've reached the point in the simulation where all we can do to quiet our minds is to scroll on our tiny screens and watch Ballerina Farms, like live an antiquated, like rustic life that's connected to the land while we shove Cheetos in our mouth.
No, fully. We are seriously like such mouth breathing, just tech zombies. As we looked at Ballerina Farm for what a vision of life could be like if we just were able to be rich, low key, and also forsake all modern conveniences.
Right. It's like the uber rich among us are able to like return to like our ancestors.
To the land.
Time, to the land. It's only literally them. I mean, like I say this as a person who polished off, you know, alongside Ben, an entire bag of reduced fat Cheetos from Trader Joe's the other day.
No, Chandler, truly healthy food is for the rich. Gardening,
it's for the rich.
For the rich. It absolutely
literally
is.
For the rich.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be Melissa Wood Health to have time for celery juice. Let's just be honest. Yes. You have to, it has to be made, you know, in your Hamptons home with a nanny off camera, a nanny and several other staff members.
1,000%. Goop Kitchen? For the rich.
For the rich. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm so ready to blow the whistle on this. You know, I have been after the physiological problem of obesity for a long time.
You teed this up for me perfectly because while you were chatting, I was like, of course this is where she's taking us. Because Lauren is actually a published author on this subject of a leading paper on the issue that she asked, that she wrote in college, that she asked me to proofread. And she asked me to – no, she didn't actually ask me to proofread. What am I saying?
I didn't.
You never would do that. You just asked me to – like you were like, I wrote this really good paper. To print – yes. You were like, I wrote this paper. Can you print it off and drop it off at my professor's office? Because we went to college at the same time. That's where we met.
For new listeners who are asking us where we met – I met Chandler when she was born. She's my sister. And yes, we went to the same college at the same time, even though I'm 5 years older. I was a little late getting my life together. We'll talk about that later. But anyway – I went through a time when I forsook technology. And so I didn't have a laptop.
Is this why?
And I think I had you print it off and turn it in for me because I was home without a computer.
Lauren's lifestyle then became everyone else's problem.
It's true. My desire to return to a brain pre-social media became everyone else's source of ire and consternation.
Can you imagine being friends with this person in college?
No, I don't have any of those friends left. They're all gone. Anyway, yeah, so I had Chandler turn in this paper, which I thought was groundbreaking, on insulin resistance. I was very interested in the mechanism of insulin resistance and the way that it was contributing to unhealthiness in our population. Yeah. It's a population issue, and I was interested in it at a population level. And anyway, I had Chandler print it off for me and turn it in, and she turns it in. Months go by.
All is well. Yeah.
All is well. And we're sitting with our brother-in-law and sister. And anyway, I'm just like, for some reason, something comes up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a great writer.
No, I feel like you were like correcting me about a word or something. You were just like, you were being a little self-righteous about how good of a writer you were. You were correcting me in some way. And that set me off.
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. And then Chandler, do you want to say what happened?
No, I think you should say, and then I'll deliver the line that I remember so easily.
Well, she was like, oh, really? You're a good writer. And I'm like, yeah, objectively, yes. I'm a good writer.
This I can literally see you now. You're sitting in the chair in Courtney and Wyatt's living room, and you're like, yeah, I mean, objectively, I'm a great writer. I'm a good writer. Just like so matter of fact.
Just,
like,
just it is what it is.
Yeah.
False humility. So boring. And then Chandler goes, oh, really? Well,
I took a quick glance at your paper before I dropped it off at your professor's office, and you had a spelling error in the first sentence. You had a grammar error in the first sentence.
And I was like, no, I did not. I proofread everything.
There's
with a fine-tooth comb. That's absolutely not true. And she was like, yeah. The first sentence was obesity. Obesity?
Say
you say it.
Yeah. Well, when I glanced it over, the first sentence said, obesity is big problem.
I was like, no.
Laura was like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way.
There's absolutely no way.
This is also not, we're not laughing during this. This is like, Lauren is getting more mad. I'm digging in my heels.
I can actually only laugh about this like 6 years later. I think the story told 2 years ago, I would have been like, it's not funny to me. I don't want to hear it. But literally, I go sweat pouring from my scalp to review the PDF I had sent Chandler. And there it is, the first sentence. Obesity is big problem in my upper level classes.
Fantastic. She's also the editor of some magazine at this point, some like literary magazine. Hilarious.
Chandler, I was the editor-in-chief of BYU's literary magazine. Please show some
What
respect.
Did you say about the people who worked at the palace? You're like, I just don't think they have the best people working there.
I don't think they have the best of the best. Anyway, you know, takes one to know one. Pot kettle.
Okay, honestly, well, and I should have told you about that error.
Dude, yeah, but you instead, should have.
I wasn't like fully mean-spirited, but I think there was like, you know, this paper's got to get turned in.
She'll survive. I probably didn't have She'll a phone you could contact me on, because that was another thing I did for a minute, was not have a cell phone. Anyway, okay. We can get into more of those stories later, but Chandler, we should move on for people who are sick of hearing about us and want us to get to celebs and big topics. Finally. Okay?
Please. Okay.
So, Chandler, this is a headline from New York Post. I'm a viral AI influencer made by computers. Now I'm going to host a segment on Survivor. So,
yeah. Another great part we've reached in the simulation.
Exactly. Here's what the article reads, and we can get into it. There's no business like show business, and now robots are getting their big break thanks to Alba Renai. So Alba Renai is the name of this
so
non-human entity on a screen hosting a segment of Survivor.
Alba Renai is a pick me girl.
Albie Renai is the C word. So with chocolatey brown locks, a thunder-stealing smile, and an ultra-fine physique, the artificial intelligence influencer has just been hired as the first non-human host on a weekly special segment on Survivor in Spain. Renai is just one of the latest computerized cuties to score a gig that's historically been held by flesh and blood folks. Ascape, a lifestyle robotics brand in NYC, has created the first fully automated AI masseuse. Have you heard about this, Chandler?
Oh my
gosh. Being a city slicker?
No, I haven't. I mean, this is something I would buy.
So, I don't think you can afford it. Using its two robotic arms, the technology set to debut in 10 Equinox gyms across the Big Apple in the spring.
I have an Equinox membership. I literally have an Equinox membership.
Literally. Will give overstressed Gothamites, I don't even know what that means, a good rub down for $60.
I mean, that's like what they refer to New York City as, because it's like Gotham, like, you know, the mayor's corrupt. Batman, gotcha. Have you ever heard of it?
To be honest, it's still hazy.
Have you ever seen any Batman movies? Probably.
I don't remember. A fraction of the cost for a massage performed by a human in Midtown Manhattan. So $60 for a massage by a robot, you do need to go check that out and tell me what it's like.
Yeah. Did they say for an hour or...
There's no specs
90
here.
90 minutes?
Wait, the other robot that's taking some human's job is Jarvis Chandler, an Android barista in Hudson Yards that could soon make real-life coffee slingers virtually obsolete. So the mono-armed machine dazzles New Yorkers visiting its refreshment kiosk inside the Japanese home goods store Muji by dancing, making eye contact with customers through its sole camera lens and complimenting patrons on their order.
Okay, I've got a big issue with Jarvis. I want these baristas to be less chatty, less friendly. I don't want any more small talk. They don't want to give the small talk to me. They don't want to engage, but give Jarvis a break.
Oh,
why does he have to be, or she, they, whatever. What?
I have a bigger issue you're going to have with Jarvis. You ready for this?
What, the eye contact?
You're going to die. No. Tipping is still expected with Jarvis.
Oh my God.
Yes. Those who pay a little extra forward should be content that their generosity goes toward Jarvis's human manager, workers explained. Employees sometimes tend to the bot themselves or mix its matcha. So yeah, still got to shell out an extra 20% on your $8 latte.
Sorry, Mom. I'm cussing a lot in this episode. My apologies, but fuck Jarvis.
Literally, fuck these people. Are you fucking kidding me? I'm sorry. I'm going to drop a million F-bombs to describe this. My blood boils so much with how tipping culture has gotten insane. The idea that they are trying to have us tip robots?
Am I supposed to tip my massage robot?
It is fully...
20%?
I think that these corporations have figured out people are idiots. Like, it's so easy to scam people.
You think?
The scams have never been easier. Never. And they're just like, no, if we start this, people will feel the obligation. A certain percentage of schlups, of suckers,
right,
will plop 10 or 20%.
Yep. 15.
Sail away, sail away, sail away. Sometimes I sing Enya to just really bring the blood pressure down.
The simulation is absolutely like rocking my shit today.
I think that it's a matter of time before the AI robots fully take over all of these jobs. We think, oh, we can never be influenced by an AI influencer. We could never be interested in what two AI chatty internet best friends have to say, but just wait till they're cuter than us. They're wittier than us. Right. They have better takes. They know all the great designers. They literally know everything. They're better than us in every way.
I mean, I bet they never sniffle on recordings like I've been known to do.
They don't sniffle. They don't complain when I have a business idea at 6 a.m. They are on it.
Okay, hold on. You've struck something. What would you have the AI version of me do better? Let's just open it up.
Oh,
because I've got notes for you.
I could replace, maybe this actually could turn out well, and I could replace you with an AI.
Well, I would replace you in a heartbeat. I would replace you in a heartbeat. You would be giving me massages.
Oh, gosh.
You would be using way more exclamation points in all of your communications to me and to clients. You okay. would be waiting until business hours to call me with business ideas.
Oh, my gosh. That's a bottleneck in our business. And I strive for efficiency above all else. Your AI version would never say no to a vacation, wouldn't drag her feet when I want to bring up white sand and turquoise water. She would text me at 6 a.m. Want to chat? I have a few biz ideas.
Hey, can I run some stuff by you? It's like 7 a.m.
It's exciting. There's no greater adventure than the life of the entrepreneur, Chandler. Anyway,
yeah, well, but I've got two jobs, but yeah.
And Chandler, I'm not sure you'll ever experience it. I mean, we all got to keep our day jobs if these AI robots are coming for our mics.
Honestly, they're going to be so annoying. AI podcasting is fully going to start happening. We just need, nothing is safe.
Which is why, hopefully, my goal is that, and I think that world leaders really need to listen to this podcast because I have a vision. But the vision is that the robots make everything so hyper-efficient. They solve all our problems. Artificial mm-hmm. intelligence figures out cancer, aging, everything essentially.
Yeah.
And they do all the work for us. And then guess what, Chandler? We get to return to the land like Hannah and Camus, okay? Like Balin on a farm. And we get to go back to making salads from the leaves outside our home because there's time. We're not stressed. You know, we don't have an outline to get to.
So it's actually a good thing. You're excited for this.
That's my utopian vision of the future.
Right.
The dystopian vision is that they take all the jobs, except for very elite few who can just make a ton of money, and there's a huge stratification of wealth. And
are they ruling over us?
They potentially gain sentience.
That's what I am worried about slightly, is like we're tilling the land and they're ruling us in the fields.
Yeah. So there is a version of this where instead of going outside and picking kale and spinach from the garden and making a beautiful mm-hmm. Ina Garten salad, instead it's more like Handmaid's Tale adjacent. We're in the, what's it called? What are they? The colonies.
The colonies.
Yeah. The humans are sent to the colonies where we can walk on wheels for energy and you know, and till the mercury from the land for more robots.
Anyway, it's really dark. Can we talk about something lighter, please?
Sure.
Let's talk about two sentient beings who are absolutely not robots.
Okay.
John Jansen, Shannon Bador.
Oh, you want to get into this? I was thinking, okay, let's get into
that. Or what? Where did you, I mean, we can go anywhere with my sentient being segue.
That's so true. You've cast a wide net with that. I think we should, before we get to Shannon Bador and John Jansen, I think we should touch on Taylor and Travis.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Well, take it away, Chan.
So, everyone, the New York Post was at it again with another gripping headline. This headline was about Travis and Taylor. It reads, "Women love men with dad bods like Travis Kelce, and there's a surprising scientific reason why." And a lot of people took issue with the fact that Travis Kelce is now apparently in the dad bod category.
Right. I mean, I think that Travis Kelce, yes, he doesn't look like a shredded model, but maybe we can blow the whistle that shredded models generally are like extremely fatigued people who are in calorie deficits and who cannot perform, cannot win Super Bowls. They definitely can't strut across stages for 4 hours a night. To be able to endure stuff like that, to be a great athlete, a lot of these, you can't look like, I don't know.
maybe this is going to sound a little woo-woo, but I just think football players come in every shape and size. Like, some football players literally put on weight because I don't really understand the sport fully, but I think they're supposed to be, like, blocking people. And so they need to be, like, pretty sturdy. And I don't think Travis Kelce has a dad bod. Like, he has a stomach.
No, he looks great. He looks amazing. Great. He's giving Denny Duquette to me. You know,
yes,
it's a little bearish,
hairy chest,
a little, you know, very manly. I totally get the attraction. I don't think he has a dad bod. A dad bod to me is like completely let yourself go, which is fine. Everyone can reach a time like that.
I want to read an excerpt from this Jezebel article that was talking about this issue because I think it's really funny. Okay,
please.
So this Jezebel article about Travis Kelce allegedly having a dad bod. The author writes, "I have to ask at this point, do chronically online social media users even know what human bodies look like? Obviously, men like Kelce aren't subject to a fraction of the bodily scrutiny that women face. But the fact that this is how we're talking about Kelce's body means the goalposts of what constitute a dad bod are continuing to shift, and that anything that isn't the build of an MMA fighter is now somehow a dad bod."
Right.
They go on. "Frankly, I'm not so much worried about men and male body image as I am that people in today's digital age just don't know what anyone or anything is supposed to look like anymore." Which I think is true. I think it's also interesting that when it comes to men, if they don't have a perfectly fit physique, they have a dad bod that's still desirable and like a thing for women. But there is no female equivalent of a dad bod. There is no like, let herself go. Mm-hmm. That's so hot to me.
Right.
And I think that's also so dark.
She's nourishing herself and her kids. Mm-hmm. She's not worried about physical, you know,
right.
She's not worried about living up to certain standards. She's confident in her skin. It's here are the science backed reasons why men are attracted. Right. It's like
why men go crazy for this.
No one's writing those articles. It's seriously so misogynistic and gross. Maybe we do need to hold men to obscenely high standards. Maybe that's the only way.
I know. Maybe that's a good thing.
To write the course of history, Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah. All in all, Travis Kelce looks great. Taylor looks great. They're hot together. I'm hot for both of them. Leave them be.
Well, I'm going to say something that's not leaving them be. Not leaving Taylor be, okay? You can tell me if we can leave it in. Okay. I loved how skimpy her suit was. I realized...
We can absolutely leave it in.
I realized why I said on the previous episode she seemed so happy and comfortable. She really did, and I think it's because she was bearing a lot more than she usually does on the beach. She's usually in like a... She's been a big fan of the diaper bottoms.
Sure, okay? Sure. Like super high waist. Yeah.
Super high waist, one piece.
More conservative.
More conservative. And I just love seeing her in a cheeky bikini. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
At a healthier size, I would say, than she's had in the past.
Literally, it's very relaxing, or not relaxing, but it's very, I think, reassuring as women watching in consuming Taylor Swift content. And I'm only talking about it because I do believe this was set up. I do think that we're going to see a lot more of Taylor and Travis as the album comes out. I think these pap shots were approved by her team.
100%.
So I think that there's something really beautiful about seeing a woman who has been open about struggling with an eating disorder clearly feeding herself in a healthy way and looking great.
Right.
I read a comment. Someone was like, "This makes me so much more confident in my body," which is very similar to Taylor's and wearing a swimsuit. And it's like, that's actually the impact people can have, these big celebrities.
This is why I love following accounts that show unretouched photos from celebrities, where it just shows normal bodies, celebrities who aren't, you know, haven't been like photoshopped into oblivion, because it does. It makes you feel more normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. No, it's so true. And I just know that a lot of those accounts, when I'm seeing photos, I've been like, oh, like my little texture, I have certain places now that I'm in my 30s and whatever. The things that I see in the mirror, especially in Nordstrom dressing rooms, they are not, you know, unique to me. They're shared by even the most lauded amongst us. But okay, moving off of that, I want to get into some revelations that have come to light. So I want to get into finally Shannon Bendoor's lawsuit, Chandler, okay? Because she went on Jeff Lewis Live, and she, I don't know if you're aware, for everyone who potentially isn't following this story, I think it's interesting whether you're interested in Bravo or not, but there's a woman named Shannon Bendoor. She, to top line it, used to live in a $15 million house with her husband, be very wealthy. They ended up divorcing. And it's very clear she does not have the financial footing she used to have. Even though it, you know, she did get a sizable settlement, it didn't seem like that money is going to be
there forever. She put a lot of it into a business venture that I don't think panned out. Anyway, so Shannon Bedore went on to date a guy named John Jansen. And John and her, it really seemed like they were going to go the distance. They were great together, but he ended up breaking it off with her and dating another reality star, Alexis Bellino, who's a Correct. Real Housewife of OC alumni, and who is, I guess, now going to appear on the season. So anyway, the thing that has hit the news is he is suing her for money he alleges he lent her to get a facelift. And, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to get sued for $75,000 by your ex-boyfriend for money he gave you for plastic surgery. It's a little tawdry, right. I would say. I mean, it's embarrassing that he's doing that, I'll be honest. If you're that age and you're suing a woman you used to date for 75 grand, I think that's a little tacky as well. But also to say, that was really all we knew. But she went on Jeff Lewis Live and she gave her side of the story. So do you want to hear what she has to say?
Yes. Yes. Let's get into it.
Okay. So this is what Shannon said. She said that about a month ago, she received a letter that she needed to come up with a payment plan to pay back the money she owed John Jansen. And so she says that the attorney's fees in the lawsuit will be larger than the amount he's requesting. Mm. And she's been down this road before. She got sued with Heather McDonald and Tamara Judge for something by actually Alexis Bellino's husband.
Yes.
So anyway, yes. Sometimes it's like you just want to not have a lawsuit because the legal fees are going to be so high.
Right.
So she offered to pay him, Chandler, the exact amount he wanted, but she stipulated that he needed to sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement. So basically saying we're not going to disparage each other in public. Mm-hmm. She said on Jeff Lewis Live that this is standard. I don't know if it's standard in these kind of settlements, but what I think is John Jansen always kind of maintained that he was a private person and he only went on the show for Shannon. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that he has chosen to date another reality star and also that he is refusing to sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement, even to get back the full amount he's suing for, betrays a thirstiness and a desire to trash her on TV in the future, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So Shannon also sheds light on the financial arrangements they had and dynamic in their relationship. So she says in the beginning of the relationship, she basically covered everything, covered a bunch of trips to New York. She said during their relationship, he only paid for a flight once. Okay. So it seems like she covered a lot for him. Yeah. She said tens of thousands of dollars.
Doesn't she say too that like when he would quote unquote pay for stuff, it would be a situation where he'd say, oh, have your stylist pick out some things for me and I'll pay you back. And then just would never pay her back.
Yeah, exactly. So they would be doing some press stuff or whatever. Like he would be coming on the show. We need to look good, get a few new outfits. And so he would say, yeah, have your stylist pull some stuff for me and I'll pay you back. And he just never would. And obviously I think it can be tricky to ask to be paid back if you feel like you're in a relationship with someone who's going to be your forever person and really everything is like community. I think that some people, even when they're not married, they do start to feel that way. What's mine is yours.
Yeah.
And she said that he said to her that you're my person, you're it for me, like you're who I want to be with. And so that's kind of how she felt being generous with him.
Right.
She does say, and it sounds like that she hit harder financial times later in the relationship and that he started to pay for more things, including a $75,000 wire he sent. And she claims that part of this was used for a facelift, not all of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like $75,000 for a facelift? That's crazy.
Well,
or is that normal?
And you know, I'm
several.
I've had several.
Just kidding.
I will say two things. One, I think it was $75,000 in total was sent to her over the course of multiple payments. So it wasn't one wire. So just want to get that as correct as I can. The other thing is Chandler, honestly, facelifts, there are people charging $500,000 for a facelift.
I mean, yours looks amazing.
I think the most expensive I've heard of is $400,000. Dana Amari talked about that on Spencer Pratt's podcast. Yeah. So facelift prices are crazy, but obviously there's reasonable, super talented surgeons who probably charge more in that, I don't know, 40 to 50 range. But I think that's kind of like the low end now is 40 to 50.
Okay.
Or at least this kind of more standard. And so anyway, so she says that she was in a time when she was in a cash crunch, needed money. And John said, I wish you could get a low interest loan. And she said, well, you have money. And he wired her the money. And she said there was no agreement or payment plan or anything else in writing that would indicate that this was not a gift. And he never asked her for the money back. You know, they've been broken up for over a year. She never heard anything about him wanting mm-hmm. the money back. And, you know, maybe she felt like she covered a lot in the beginning. He covered more right. at the end. Comme ci, comme ça, whatever. I don't even know what that means, but I hope it makes sense. And yeah, so she thought it was a gift, according to her. And now he's coming after her and he wants the money back. And he wants to be able to say whatever he wants to say right. about her in a very public way.
I think, so anyway, you know, to play armchair psychologist about his frame of mind, clearly he's not that moved on from her, or he's not just so focused on his love with Alexis that he just wants to fully forget about the Shannon chapter. Like, the idea that I would have an ex where I was like, well, no, I still want to be able to fully talk about you and, you know, be super public about how terrible our relationship was is crazy.
I heard murmurings, whispers that he loved the show and loved being in the limelight. I sure. think that choosing to date another reality star very much shows that yeah. that's true. I also think
he might want to be a full cast member.
I mean, he like might be the next Slade Smiley. Yeah. And I think that there's probably a version of this where Alexis found out what he had lent her and was like, yeah. are you kidding me? We could actually really use that money, get it right. back. Like, you're yeah. not just going to low-key write it off. If you told her that this was an alternative to a personal loan, she should know she has to pay you back. And that does happen, you know, with new wives, stepmoms.
I could see Alexis being like, hey, we could go on Below Deck with that money. Get it back.
We could go on Below Deck again. We could lend it to Kate Middleton, who I guess didn't have an early 40s facelift and maybe is in the market.
Yeah.
You never know what that conversation went like. Anyway, very interesting. I definitely feel for Shannon. I think that this whole thing is kind of humiliating. But you know what I will say? I think that the facelift thing is such a roll of the dice. And she really looks great. So I would say hashtag no regrets, hashtag YOLO, hashtag keeping you, Shannon. Who cares? You'll get through this.
That last one was a zinger. Hashtag keep being you, Shannon. Who cares? Hashtag. Yeah, I completely agree with you. She looks fantastic. And John Jansen looks like the loser in this situation. All of the syrupy posts with Alexis, they don't look super genuine, or at least like to anyone with two eyes just can see that this guy might be a grifter.
You think?
Yeah.
You guys, we have a very special thing we're going to start doing. So we have quite a few new listeners, if the numbers are true. And so we want you to know that there's a lot of Pop Apologist material. Clearly, we have a library of over 400 episodes, including our Patreon. And we have certain moments from the podcast that are kind of integral to getting our inside jokes, to getting what we do here, to just kind of getting the lay of the Pop Apologist land. Golden moments that people, that once they hear them, they're obsessed with the show. And we don't want you to have to listen to all 400 to get to those moments. So what we're going to start doing is every couple of episodes, we're going to put that moment at the end. We're going to cut to it and let you experience a few really fun moments from Pop Apologist's, you know, history.
Yeah, I would say Pop Apologist lore. We're going to be splicing in some Pop Apologist lore.
Exactly.
So we're going to cut to a moment where our mom was desperate in the drive-thru, and we'll leave mm-hmm. it at that. But I think it explains a lot about who we are, where mm-hmm. we come from, mm-hmm. and yeah, why we are the way we are.
So true, Chandler. Everyone, so with that, please enjoy our first Pop Apologist golden moment.
I have to tell a mom Karen story that is probably one of the funniest stories of our time.
Our mom has had some Karen moments, and this is perhaps her finest. Take it away.
Okay, so our mom used to, she's not into it anymore, but she used to be very into the Chick-fil-A diet lemonade. So into it, mm-hmm. she would get it by the gallon. She would have my dad.
She would get like 3 to 4 gallons for like time. 2 weeks.
She always, mm-hmm. she would freeze it. Like she would buy like 4 gallons at a time. She would freeze 2 of them. That way she only had to go like once or twice a week. No, probably like once every 2 weeks. But anyway, she was very, very into the Chick-fil-A diet lemonade. She told us a story that one time she was just like, okay, she was driving the streets of Laguna Niguel, just jonesing for her next fix of diet lemonade.
Also, to add a little bit of context, our mom doesn't leave the house very often. She doesn't like to go to the grocery store. She never goes to her friend's house. Her friends always have to come to her. She's a homebody to the max.
Wait, how is that relevant to this?
Well, just that she was leaving the house, like to go get the, you know, she was fiending because she didn't make our dad stop. So yeah. sorry to give that data point more context, y'all.
Yeah. So our mom very rarely leaves the house. She's kind of like a mountain. You have to come to her.
Oh my gosh. Lauren is, everyone, sorry, this is a small interjection, but Lauren is just such a poet to her core. Oh my gosh. And I just like, I appreciate her prose every day.
Thank you. I do what I can. So yes, our mother is so desperate. She decides to leave her house on the hill and drive to Laguna Niguel, which is the closest Chick-fil-A at the time, and get her diet lemonade. So she drives into the parking lot, she gets in line, and the person says, hello, you know, what would you like or whatever? And my mom says, I'll take a gallon of your diet lemonade and a large diet lemonade, does her order. And the person goes, I'm sorry, we don't sell our diet lemonade by the gallon. And my mom says, mom's like literally like probably blinks slowly, tries to adjust her eyes to the light, tries to hear, like tries to compute the voice that is just spoken, and says, I'm sorry, what? They said, yeah, we don't sell our diet lemonade by the gallon. And my mom says, I'd like to speak to like your supervisor. The supervisor comes on and the supervisor reiterates that they don't sell it by the gallon. And so the mom says, I buy your diet lemonade by the gallon all the time, like growing more and more heated. And then she's like, and she's finally like at her breaking point. Okay. Like the fuse is like about to explode. And as these workers continue to deny her reality and gaslight her that, that they have never sold the diet lemonade by the gallon. So finally, my mom, in all of her just complete frustration, she says, so you mean to tell me that you're the only Chick-fil-A that doesn't sell the diet lemonade by the gallon? And then the voice says back, ma'am, this is El Pollo Loco.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to like pee my pants while recording this podcast.
When she told us this story, like that was probably one of the best moments of our lives. Do you remember this part?
Yeah. After she's faced the music of her being in a El Pollo Loco drive-thru. The El Pollo Loco is also just situated right next door to the Chick-fil-A. She had just pulled into the wrong drive-thru.
Yeah, exactly. It's right next door. Because she was in a haze, like a withdrawal haze. Yeah. So she couldn't figure out, totally. she couldn't read. She couldn't figure out if El Pollo Loco was Chick-fil-A or not. She saw buildings. She didn't notice that one was a Mexican menu, not a chicken restaurant menu.
One was like a grilled chicken club and one was like an El Classic burrito. All that happened. And she's then gridlocked behind cars in the back. And cars in the back, mm-hmm, and cars exactly. in the front. So she then has to continue pulling through the drive-thru and make eye contact with the El Pollo Loco staff as she pulls on through.
She had to slink through just like the drive of shame after she's berated.
The drive of shame is so real.
So hilarious.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.